This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Adaptiva kickstarts funding.
And the politics of HPC.
Good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for October 5th, 2012, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined once again by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. Y'all revved up from the debates this week?
No, not really, but yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit, sort of. Yeah, there's some interesting news we should probably get to first. Actually, this news dropped last week. We just didn't quite have time to get to it, but it's about a company we've talked about quite a bit on the show over the past few years, that startup called Adaptiva, the company that is developing a floating point accelerator, sort of in competition with NVIDIA and Intel to a certain extent, and they were looking to do a new funding model this week.
They've got a new way that they're trying to get funding for their next generation processor.
Yeah, and I wasn't all that familiar with this, but there's something called Kickstarter that a lot of people know about. It's a funding model that basically crowdsources funding from a lot of sort of micro investors at very small amounts, and you basically invest in the company and you get something out. You form it in the form of a project, and you get something basically to sell to people, and you get people to invest, and there's a certain time frame and dollar amount, and then if they reach that dollar amount in the time frame, everybody gets billed, the money gets passed around, and the project takes off.
Yeah, crowdsourcing is kind of this hot topic right now that you read about in popular press, and the idea that you're going to get new innovative business ideas off the ground by having the population at large hitting like on Facebook. And along with that, I kick in my $20, my $50, my $100, and the thing gets going. Although I'd never heard crowdsourcing applied to HPC before.
Yeah, this is a little bit unique. But in the Kickstarter, there's been more than a couple of success stories. In the computing industry, there was one that was recently in the news about Raspberry Pi, this small computer that was basically sold through this funding model. It wasn't HPC. It was more of a general purpose microcomputer, basically, and I can't remember how much the amount was. It's less than what the Adaptiva folks are doing. But in this case, Adaptiva is basically selling a startup development kit for $99, but it's pretty powerful. So it's got their chip on it, which gives you, like, I think the 16-core version gives you like 25 or 30 gigaflops, and then there's an ARM chip on it that's the host CPU, and then just a bunch of other board stuff that lets you connect it to whatever you need to connect it to, whether it's a sensor or camera or whatever, and you can write real applications, do real development, parallel development, for very cheap, in this case $99. That's what they're looking for.
Yeah, let's talk about the two things separately here. One is the technology and whether or not that's a good idea in HPC and how much we like it. The other is the news around the funding model. I mean, we're looking at another opportunity here to have an accelerator and a new way to do parallel processing. How do we think this stacks up to other FPGA or coprocessor areas of the GPU market? Intel, Mike, this is starting to be a pretty crowded space.
Yeah, in a way, although we've seen some fall by the wayside, too. So Adaptiva's big story is energy efficiency. In fact, that's almost the big story of all these accelerators, but they're not coming from a legacy CPU background or a GPU background. So basically, it's this pure floating point accelerator in a mm-hmm. RISC model. So it's just basically what, sort of similar to what ClearSpeed was doing.
ClearSpeed, it's very similar to ClearSpeed's story.
Right, so they have very impressive flops per watt numbers. It's a little hard to do apples to apples comparisons with things like the NVIDIA board because that's got memory on it and other components, but it's very
competitive. Flops per watt has always been a very difficult thing to measure in any case, because what you're really looking for is not theoretical flops and theoretical watts, but delivered flops in an application for consumed watts, which is just, I mean, unless you're actually putting a meter on your thing while you're running it, it's very tricky to measure.
It is, and especially with something new like this where there aren't, you know, applications to measure. I mean, they've done some benchmarking, obviously, and some other stuff, because they're pretty far along the development cycle. They've got basically five generations of this chip, but there's no production models out there that with a slew of applications in HPC. In fact, the whole thing right now is being aimed at mostly the embedded market. The HPC is sort of this future thing, because it's something that the community is very interested in. That's something, I mean, obviously performance per watt for this level of flops is very compelling. So to me, I mean, I've covered this on a few occasions, and the technology is compelling, and they've got a good story, and they're slowly building up their credibility, but it's an expensive model. You're going up against, you know, NVIDIA and Intel with a lot of resources.
Right.
They don't have a software ecosystem to start with, so they've partnered with some people. But this is a way to literally kickstart that. They're looking to get developers involved for $99 and say, here's our board. Start developing. Start making tools. See if
it's literally kickstarting it in the sense that the name of the company is Kickstart. I don't think it's literally kickstarting it in terms of someone's boot being involved, right?
Right. Not that, right.
It's we got to crack down on the use of the word literally here. You're an editor, like, for crying out loud.
It's a metaphor of a metaphor. Okay. Guilty as charged. But yeah, so it's an interesting idea. And so they started this last week, and they're looking to get $750,000 worth of pledges, basically, which basically means
at $100 a shot.
Yeah,
right?
7,500 people, and they started this last week, and they're up to close to 1,000 now. So they've gotten the word out to a certain extent, and they need the other 6,500 over the next 20-odd days to reach that goal.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not that kind of analyst, but I'm dubious about crowdsourcing in general as something that everyone's getting excited about. I think there's a limited population of people out there who are willing to throw $20 to $100 to $500 in an idea just because they like it. Now, to your point, in this case, you're getting something out of it. It's not just that I'm trying to support a good idea. In fact, what I'm going to get out of is a new board. But to me, this isn't really crowdsourcing in that case. It's really just pre-ordering, but using social media and to try to get there, right? What's the difference between this and pre-ordering a board?
Well, yeah, I mean, the semantics of it, but the idea is you're investing, you're becoming an investor in this. And
no, you're not. You're pre-ordering a board.
If they don't reach the goal, you won't invest in it. But it's
means you're not investing in it. See, the thing is, investing is I'm going to spend money on it and then hope it comes to fruition. In this case, I'm not spending anything. I'm just promising to buy a board if you get enough people to develop one. It's pre-ordering.
Okay. But I mean, the hope is for the investors that it will come to fruition. They'll get their board. They'll be able to do it. And I think some of this is altruistic too. There's going to be a lot of these, you know, at least initial 1,000 people are from academia. They want to see something like this succeed. They're interested in this sort of diversity in the parallel computing space, and they're interested in getting behind that. So
altruism in the sense of I'll buy 10 even though I don't want them just because I want the company to survive. I suppose that's possible, but again, I'm dubious here. Well, which isn't to say it isn't a good idea, right? Absolutely. Go out there, pre-sell your boards. I just think we're jumping onto the crowdsourcing term because it's hot, and you're going to get people out there excited that they're involved in a crowdsourcing project.
I mean, the challenge for somebody like Adaptiva, it's not a general purpose thing like Raspberry Pi was, which was more consumer-oriented perhaps. I mean, this is for a community that's a subset of the larger computing community. So they've got to get the word out to the right people. But certainly there's 7,500 people more, I'm sure, that would be interested in playing with something like that, that's interested in parallel computing, especially if you look at the global community, that would find this somewhat attractive. I mean, the thing for Adaptiva was, without this funding, basically the boards are too expensive to get into the hands of a lot of developers. Without you know, they have to make the chip. There's a certain investment that needs to be made there. And their boards, you know, were selling for like, you know, a few thousand dollars. So you could only give a limited amount of those out. With here,
right,
if they get the investment, they're able to get the mask sets for the chip fab and make these for just a few dollars per chip and make it all possible. And then you have a little bit of an ecosystem going. So that's sort of the impetus and the idea behind
this. Right. Well, what I could see is you got to be able to prove that you've got the customers here, right? The people who are buying in at the $99 here aren't pre-funding anything because they're not getting charged until the boards are ready to get delivered. So they're not investing in the sense of they're lending money that'll help start the manufacturing process, get the line going. In theory, they might still need some investment from that. But you're going to an investor, you'd like to be able to say, here are the customers who are lined up, right? This could be a very clever way of getting your angel investor or your VC to sign off on the loan because they can see exactly where their payoff is. Once the manufacturing process is done, then here's the pre-committed orders that I can collect right away and pay you back.
Yeah, that's a good point. They might attract other investments. I mean, they have some investments now. I think since they started... the company, since they started in 2008, I believe they've collected like $2.5 million in private investments at this point. Here, they're trying to accelerate that, to
right,
accelerate the whole cycle and the ecosystem and all that. But yeah, you're right. This could actually help private investment too for the company, and so we'll see how that develops.
Well, let's take a quick break, Michael, and we'll talk about some other economic concerns, starting with the effect of the next president on the HPC industry, what that has to do with the economy. And then we got one vendor in particular who's also blaming economic woes.
Okay.
Mellanox's end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect products, consisting of ConnectX 3 adapter products, the comprehensive SwitchX family of fixed and modular switches, software, and cables, deliver industry-leading performance, scalability, efficiency, and economics for the best return on investment for performance interconnects. Mellanox provides its worldwide customers with the broadest, most advanced, and highest performing end-to-end interconnect solutions for the world's most compute-demanding applications. For more information on Mellanox's end-to-end connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering, visit www.mellanox.com.
Well, Michael, I said at the top, you know, we had our presidential debate here in the U.S. this week, and although it's a local topic to this country, I think there's a lot of Americans who are concerned about the presidential election for lots of reasons. Now, professionally, we're in the HPC industry, and it bears the question of whether it matters who the next president is for the HPC industry.
Yeah, you would think so. Although, you know, if you listen to the debates, and I think we both did, there wasn't much talk of science, much less HPC or investment in science and technology.
There was certainly talk of the economy in general,
yeah,
and there's talk about other things related to HPC, like defense or war.
Right. Well, and this week I caught an article in an Exascale report that actually. They actually surveyed some people, some of their readers, and asked them this exact question: does the president have any impact on HPC or Exascale? And the response basically was about a third of them said no, and the other two thirds said yes.
I would split my vote depending on whether you said HPC or Exascale. In the near term, Exascale, no, I don't think too much, because most of that, to the reader's points, is coming out of Congress and DOE spending and things like that. The Exascale initiative is a pretty specific question. But if you broaden it to HPC, I would change my answer to yes, although I think it's in indirect ways, right? Whether or not we're currently at war, for example, I think has a lot to do with HPC spending that happens in defense.
How so?
Well, I don't think the defense budget changes very much year to year depending on whether the troops are active right now. Now, when they're active, you got to spend more money on the actual supporting the war effort, on planes and guns and things like that. But if we're not actively engaged in a war, then more of the money can be spent on war support efforts and research and development. The DoD is a big consumer of HPC. We've got these distributed shared research centers, and there's the R&D portion of the defense budget that I think gets influenced by what the current policy is.
Yeah, I just wonder how much of that money is actually fungible, that it goes from, you know, troops on the ground to HPC if there's not troops on the ground. But yeah, I mean, point taken. I see there's, since the president is commander in chief, there's that sort of direct impact there. I don't know. I guess I would tend to answer both of those questions. No, I don't think the president does have a major impact on this, just because, well, of a lot of reasons. But basically, the political climate now is such that the president has very little power to allocate money to pet projects that he even wants to show leadership on in either party, whoever gets in there. It's just not the kind of circumstances now where the Congress is spending money on projects that, you know, haven't existed for a long time. There's no appetite to, you know, for exascale or HPC or just science and technology in general. There's not really the will to do that. And even if the president expended some political capital to get these things done, in fact, I think Obama did back a few years ago to start up the STEM R&D projects, the money wasn't allocated. I mean, Congress basically has to do the allocation, and it wasn't done because there's no consensus there. The political climate's terrible right now for spending money in government in the U.S., and yeah, everybody's worried about the deficit, which is rising. Right. So I think the president is right now, at least, is powerless to influence HPC and exascale and beyond that for the immediate future.
Well, you're right. There have been a few unfunded mandates, you could call them, that have been disappointing in HPC. You go back to the America Competes Reauthorization Act of 2010, which had some language in it that was really specific to HPC that, as far as we can tell, nothing ever happened with that.
Right.
That was followed up by the Advanced Manufacturing Partnership, but that was really a grouping or renaming of some initiatives that were already in progress anyway. It wasn't a lot of new stuff that came about with that. So I think another area where the president does have an effect, though, is just in the health of the economy in general. If you believe the president has any impact on the economy, you know, if businesses are doing well and they're profitable, then they're more likely to be able to spend money on computing resources, and HPC is part of that.
Well, I mean, that's true to the extent that the president can influence the economy. Even there, it's somewhat limited. I mean, we went through just obviously a very bad cycle, and the government had very little to do with that, and the government, you know, has only a little bit. I mean, again, there's this gridlock that prevents sort of these big solutions from coming forward. So, and again, the president, again, is limited now in this climate to actually influence the larger economy in a significant way. But true enough that, you know, certain amounts of leadership will do good things for the economy, which will expand the pie, which will influence HPC and exascale, sure.
And there's at least one vendor that's been in the news this week that's very concerned with the economy, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. Meg Whitman this week, the CEO of HP, had her presentation on the street in order to convince investors that her turnaround was in progress and that you should keep confidence in HPC. And she left that meeting, and HP's stock promptly plummeted another 18%, I think, within minutes of her leaving the building. So I guess investors not too impressed by her claims that the sluggish economy would keep HP's turnaround in progress for another 4 years.
Yeah, HP's sort of been a problem child for a while, and ironically, not on the side that we cover so much. I mean, their server business has benefited from a lot of things. I mean, Sun basically being swallowed up by Oracle, for one, and then the general health of the data center enterprise business through even this sort of downturn in the economy. And
They're mostly getting killed on the consumer side, is what it seems. But and to your point, the last couple of years, they've been a fast-growing vendor in terms of share in HPC. The primary beneficiary is Sun exiting the market. HP's been tearing it up on the HPC side. But, you know, you worry about the momentum with that, where they're just running out of the ability to invest. I don't know what investment leadership for HPC is coming out of HP right now, because the problem is, it's not that the company is going to go out of business, right? Sun and SGI and Cray have all faced corporate viability issues that hurt the company. My concern is more one around investment. It's hard to keep your investments going in hot areas when your profits in one group are funding losses in another group.
Yeah, how true. But they do have a choice, and I think their choice looks like it's going to be made to fund the consumer side. I mean, they're looking at tablets and smartphones now, and they're still keeping their printer business going. They talk a lot about their consumer business. They've talked very little, at least recently, at the corporate level about their server business. They could invest there, even though they've got the debt. They could put the focus there. They've just chosen this path to keep a consumer business going in this company. And so far, the investor community has not been kind to that sort of decision.
Well, compare and contrast with IBM, who's maybe one of HP's closest cohorts. IBM shucked a lot of the consumer stuff, sold the PC lines off to Lenovo going back years ago. And if there's any area where IBM's been investing large over the last couple of years, it's been in analytics and big data and let's build a smarter planet. And IBM's value is, I think, more than doubled over the last, since the start of 2009. HP, in contrast, has held on to the big data, held on to the consumer stuff. I haven't seen a big analytics or big data initiative, which is the hot area in the enterprise and HPC scalable computing topics. And HP's value is about a quarter what it was at the start of 2010.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting correlation. Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I mean, it's curious to me why HP is so interested in their consumer business, where it doesn't seem like it's the type of company that's going to be really competitive in that space in the 2010s. That's just maybe 10 years ago they could have done it, just as IBM could have done it. But now it's a different market. And it seems like they would have to invest a lot of money. They would have to become another Samsung or something like that to get a hold of this market. And it seems like the low-hanging fruit for them is the enterprise business.
Oh, I would have loved to have seen Meg come out and say, you know, big data and analytics and high-performance computing are all areas of leadership for HP where they can demonstrate growth and opportunity and, you know, let's invest there. And that's not what she's out there saying right now.
Yeah. Well, again, I guess we'll see how this goes along. I mean, HP is obviously, in our space, is a big player, and I think will continue to be. But, a little kind of worrisome to see such a terrible reaction to a CEO talking about their future.
All right. Well, that's a bunch of topics for this week, Michael. Maybe the economy will be better next week.
Yeah, that's a good thought. All right. Well, until then, Addison, you have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Michael. Talk to you.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.